I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB, here weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, offering you a safe space if you're an independent thinker out there. Today's Wednesday. Next hour, we will get into Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use, a segment that's been going since I came to the airwaves in 2017. And we're going to talk, just the news break just now said that even Dr. Paul, what's his name, Byers, one of the state epidemiologists, is saying that COVID is leveling off now. That's almost refreshing to hear from one of our state authorities. I mean, That's not a scary message. He might get fired. You're supposed to keep everybody in a constant state of panic all the time. But COVID is certainly, it is everywhere now. We'll talk a little bit about that in a second. But next hour, I'll go through what the Madison household keeps on hand for any viral infection. I've had this kind of roster of supplements and food source things around every single, you know, fall and winter for the past 15, 16 years now. And I haven't had a sick day in that time. So I'll talk a little bit about just my little arsenal of stuff. It's incredibly simple. And I'm not talking about ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, those kinds of things. I'm talking about for any kind of virus, some things that are good to keep around. And then I've got a really great clip for next hour of a doctor explaining really what is happening to our health. This clip is long. I typically won't run anything that's past about 4 minutes. I like just to get kind of bite-sized pieces of information on health. But it was really a pretty fascinating thing that I just don't think people understand what has happened to our food sources, how that leads to more disease, and how we're not properly addressing the root cause of disease. So it's a great clip. We'll do that next hour, so stick around for that. If you can't, for any reason, you miss a health show, which I believe is one of the more empowering hours on Mississippi Central Radio, you can either email me, MikeMadison@WYEB.com. I'll send you my show notes, but you can also get the show on podcast by going to themikemadisonshow.podbean.com. And you can subscribe there. You can get it also on Apple Podcasts and some other places. I believe TuneIn app. You can listen to WYAB if you're out of range of us. You can get the TuneIn app and find WYAB on there. And I believe the podcast is on there as well. I didn't put it there. Somehow it ended up there. So anyway, you can always get that information. But it's one of the segments I'm most proud of. And by listener response, I'm always just thrilled to hear people taking control of their own health. Not always, you know, because of me, but I just get stories of people who made moves independent of me, maybe before they heard the sound of my voice and they stumbled on my show and they like it because they've seen the results in their own life. So it's a dear, dear segment of mine. Hump Day Health next hour. I was very sorry to see here that Charlie Watts had died. I was in the great debate between the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. I was always a Stones guy. My sister was more of a Beatles girl. Beatles, certainly a genius group, but I was just always a Stones fan. Seen the Rolling Stones 4 times, I believe. I got to tell you, I was a little hesitant to even want tickets to this latest tour. You know, when the guys are getting into their 70s and 80s, playing the music that you loved when you were in your teens and 20s, it feels a little bit like almost facing your own mortality at some point. Although I got to tell you, every single time I've seen Mick Jagger, over the last 10 or 15 years, I'm always amazed that he still looks great and can still do his thing. But anyways, very sad to hear about Charlie Watts. Such a big Stones fan. He's getting a lot of acclaim in the people talking about him, about what a great drummer he is. And he certainly played a great role in the Stones. I mean, he's one of those people that, you know, he was the right drummer for the right band and was great with that. But was he really one of the best drummers ever? Like, with all due respect, I mean, the guy kept obviously impeccable time, and he was a jazz drummer. That's incredibly complex, too. But I got to tell you, I'm kind of a Neil Peart with Rush drummer guy. I want to hear some really exciting stuff come out of a drummer. That was not Charlie Watts, but he certainly was the right drummer for the Rolling Stones. And people probably more knowledgeable than me say he was a truly talented drummer. But anyway, it's sad. And the most amazing thing is that Keith Richards lives on. He may be the last man standing. He must have just laughed at COVID. I got to tell you, I don't think that drugs and alcoholism is good for your health, but Keith Richards has somehow threaded the needle and pickled himself to a degree where he may be immune to everything, but it'll be a sad day. We're all going to really be, you know, they try to fearmonger to us with COVID or any other health scare things they put out there. If Keith Richards dies of something, that's what I'm going to keep my eye on. You know, when it comes to COVID... You know, it is not the huge threat that we've been led to believe. I mean, I think that's even a controversial statement. People say, oh, what are you talking about? But really, if we ever knew the actual statistics of how many people contracted it, which is probably going to be in the hundreds of millions, and most people fought it off, a vast, 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 vast majority of people have everything from zero symptoms up to mild symptoms to maybe a week where they just feel a little bad. There are certainly tragic stories at the top of those, just like there are every flu year. So we've been told this is some existential threat to our entire way of life. And Sweden has just shown us that is not the case. But I got to tell you, this Delta variant appears to be. I did a story yesterday, I believe it was Great Britain, where they were reporting the cases and the deaths. And within just a few months, there have been as many Delta cases as there were of the original COVID over the course of about a year. So I do believe that the Delta variant is more transmissible somehow. But at the same time, even though Delta had the same number of cases in a few months that the original, the Alpha, had over the course of a year, the deaths were one quarter. So it's obviously not as deadly. But I got to tell you that it does seem to be catchy. Either that or there is something else going around that they are misdiagnosing, because I know more people right now who are either sick or somebody in their household is sick right now than at any other time in the last 18 months. Now, this probably signals some kind of a peak. And as our state epidemiologist said, it looks like they're plateauing here. But I will tell you, I have talked to a lot of people in the last few days. I get texts of people, I'll just be talking to them, and they'll casually mention, oh, yeah, well, I cannot taste anything. I can't smell anything. So it's a funky disease. And just because, you know, I and other people on the station question the vaccine and resist the idea of mandatory shots against people's will doesn't mean we don't understand that there's a risk of contracting a virus right now. The problem is we will never know how many people could have actually gotten sick to really know what the danger of this is. And that's, you know, we don't test every year everybody who's walking around. We don't test them to see if they've got the flu. Can you imagine what the flu numbers would have been over the last 10 years if they just arbitrarily tested everybody for the flu? We would have a case-demic in flu, particularly if we used that PCR test. But these people that have just tested positive does not mean that they are at risk of any threats to themselves or to other people. But listen to this. Days after Rice University delayed its first 2 weeks of classes due to a high number of students testing positive for COVID-19, the Houston, Texas-based college revealed that upon a retest of dozens of students, quote, all but one of those turned out to be negative. After 90% of the positive test results came from just one provider, in most cases involved people reporting no symptoms, officials grew suspicious. An investigation revealed that the provider had changed its protocol to determine test results without the university's knowledge. Again, So they postponed school for 2 weeks. Cases everywhere. They were worried about it. It turns out, I think they retested 51 samples of these things. Only one of them was still a positive case at the end of this thing. And this is not, you know, we've been doing these, and I think the group that did this testing was not named, but none of us know who's doing the testing on these large-scale things. Nobody knows who's doing it, what lab certification. I had somebody go the other day for a COVID test. I said, make sure you get the cycle threshold on the PCR test, but they got a rapid test. I guess that doesn't involve a CC, so we don't know. But out of 51 cases, 50 of them were false positives. And this is just something, it's just going to leave such a mystery. It is a shame. I have this debate with my friend. He said, well, we'll look back. Sometime we'll know the real numbers. I say, no, we won't. We will never know. We will never know, because I believe our medical community, the media, everybody else, would have to do huge mea culpas at how wrong they got everything if they were ever to actually give us the true numbers. It sure would be nice to have good information in the face of something like this, isn't it? But it's all hope is lost there. Canada has rolled out an interesting program I'll talk about when we get back. They are addressing something they say is a gap in their healthcare system up there when it comes to these incredibly safe and effective vaccines. Check this out when I come back. Stay with me. I just read a heartbreaking email from a listener. I will have to get permission from them to share this thing. I'm telling you, our medical system, I've never been so proud of my track record of trying to expose our medical system, the FDA, the CDC, for 4.5 years now, long before we ever heard the term COVID. I was setting it. I mean, I've been teeing up these people, just telling you not to trust them, that your health is in your hands. Oh, my gosh. Heartbreaking story. I'll see if I can relay that to people tomorrow. You know, I've heard a lot about the new mandatory vaccine order since Pfizer was granted this FDA approval. Might have been the New York school teachers, they were locked and loaded the second the news came out. I think it was within an hour they announced a mandate for all of their personnel to get the vaccine. I have never heard in any of the sources I've looked at, and I might have missed something because I got to tell you, I'm avoiding mainstream news like the plague, pun intended. So maybe I missed this, but in the stories that I have seen, everywhere I've seen it written, that vaccine mandates that more people should rush out and get the vaccine, from talking heads saying now that it has approval, it should reduce hesitancy. It's only the Pfizer that's been granted this full approval, which I believe is worth nothing. The FDA is a vaccine sales organization, a pharmaceutical sales organization. They are not a legitimate guardian of your health. I'll prove that to you next hour. Again. But why are they not telling everybody, okay, we're doing new vaccine mandates, but only the Pfizer, don't get the Moderna? I have not heard one organization say, and in all of this mandating, we're mandating everybody go out and get the Pfizer. This approval of the Pfizer vaccine is not an approval of the Moderna. That's still pending. Moderna is still operating under emergency use authorization. But they don't make any, they make no distinctions between the two. The same way they've come out and said that the Pfizer right now is circling the drain at about 39% effectiveness, while the last thing I saw in Moderna was supposedly 70. I don't believe either of these numbers. I mean, I'm going to tell you. I've reported enough on Israel's experience and Great Britain's experience and Australia's experience to say it just doesn't make any logical sense. But bottom line is, even their numbers show Pfizer at around 39%, Moderna at 70, and yet not one health authority comes out and says, with this Delta variant, we need everybody to go to the Moderna. That's more effective. Why wouldn't they say that? It's one of the easiest things in the world, but I guess it falls into the category of why they won't tell you to get your vitamin D levels up. because their interest is not health. Their interest is in compliance and control. I would like to know. I would like to know from anybody. You can email me. Again, it's MikeMadison@WIEB.com. I would like to know, hear from people, if employers are mandating this thing. I'm a big old fat libertarian. I believe in private property rights, and I believe in people who own businesses really being able to make their decisions. I'm a little, it stretches. There are some tough things to come to grips with when you want the government out of everything and want the, you know, even the courts. But when it comes to employers mandating this stuff, I support a business owners making their own decision for their own companies. But this is a tough one because it feels a little bit like extortion to me, which is illegal. Threatening to take something from somebody if they do not perform what is a medical procedure. That I really struggle with that. But I do not want to support any businesses that are mandating against employees' wishes. Now, if employees are all stoked and they rush out and they get the vaccine voluntarily, then that's fine. And no harm, no foul. But for an employer to force their employees to decide between feeding their families and taking a shot that they don't want, that they're resisting. You know, there have been these places, the federal government has mandated it, but I already hate the federal government. I boycott them. You know, I've got two goals in my life. One is never to go into a hospital unless I have to. And the other is avoid any interactions with government at any level at all times forever. Not always possible, but I'm certainly willing to boycott the federal government. But I do not want to support businesses that force their employees against their will to get an experimental shot. I think employers should be curious. There's so much information out there, and I provide it every day here for 2 hours. I'm not talking about, I am using, you know, yesterday I talked about a study in The Lancet showing that, you know, vaccinated healthcare workers were carrying 251 times the amount of virus in their noses that unvaccinated people were. This was in the British Medical, no, it was in the Lancet as a study done by Oxford University. These are their sources. And if an employer, any employer that would just arbitrarily force their employees to do something without just the slightest bit of research to think to themselves, am I doing the right thing for my staff and for those people who help me make my business run? Again, I support a business owner really to do pretty much whatever they want to do with their business. But there's a callousness to forcing your employees to take a jab of something. That's very, very creepy to me. And I believe that employers who do that have a responsibility to look at all sides to make sure that they are not putting their employees at any harm if they are going to threaten them with taking away their livelihood. So if you know of employers who are mandating these jabs, you know, I believe, unfortunately, Frontier Airlines, I believe, is mandating the vaccines, which is a shame because I've got my friend out in Colorado and I've taken Frontier out there and it sure was cheap. Of course, it was really, I discovered something very interesting when I went to Colorado the last time on Frontier. My ticket was like $19. Of course, there were about $68 worth of fees and taxes on that, but my actual fare to get from Jackson nonstop to Denver, Colorado was about $19 on Frontier. But then I had to sit through about a 10-minute presentation on getting the Frontier credit card. It was like, basically my flight was like taking one of those free timeshare vacations where, all right, we'll get you to Colorado, but you got to sit through the presentation. They come by and try to hard sell you on the Frontier credit card. It was quite the bait and switch. That's all right. I got to Colorado for $19 fare. I'll take it. Those days are probably gone. But I won't be flying Frontier Airlines again. I find it very gross, disrespectful to their employees. I'll pay a few bucks to go on another airline. Delta, American, and Southwest have said they will not mandate, so I will use them. Again, forcing somebody to do something against their will for something this silly, It's just not going to work for me. Safe and effective, though, the employers will tell you. The only way we feel confident is because now they've got the full approval of the FDA, and these things have been proven to be safe and effective. Well, this is interesting because Canada has rolled out a new program. This is the headline here on the Toronto Sun. Burial cost covered for Canadians killed by approved vaccine. What? Wait, what? That's the headline. Burial cost covered for Canadians killed by approved vaccines. Here's down in the story. Burial cost will now be covered by Ottawa for individuals killed by federally approved vaccines. According to Blacklock's reporter, the Department of Health will pick up the tab and says the new program, quote, addresses a longstanding gap in Canada's national immunization programming by providing a timely, no-fault financial support mechanism for all people in Canada in rare instances where they are seriously and permanently injured performing a public good being immunized. Now they say in here, it addresses a longstanding gap in Canada's national immunization programming in rare instances. They talk about rare instances. Now, what's a funeral cost? What's a burial cost? I don't guess you're probably going to get the bells and whistles up in Canada. What's a burial cost? $6,000, $10,000? Maybe they're putting them in kind of a potter's field. I don't know. Maybe this is a pine casket. But let's just say $10,000 to bury somebody in Canada. So how much money do you think they put aside for this very, 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 very rare program to bury Canadians for free if they're killed? And this is not from COVID. This is from the vaccines. Again, the headline is burial costs covered for Canadians killed by approved vaccines. $75 million. Department has budgeted $75 million for all claims, but said it was unclear how many submissions there could be. If your average burial is $10,000 and they're setting aside $75 million, got to tell you, that doesn't feel really rare to me. But anyway, that should reduce the hesitancy. Maybe that's part of their marketing up here. It may kill you, but the funeral's on us.
What's the frequency, can it the shop been so drained?
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. All right, so I've already got my one report here. City of Jackson, Chokwe Lumumba, has mandated vaccinations for all city employees, contractors, subcontractors, everybody. It does say in here, I pulled it up, city employees who choose not to provide proof of their full vaccination status will have to participate in weekly testing at their own cost. You got to love all the little punitive things they do. They've been providing testing at no cost for forever. This is some big public health crisis, right? They tell you that they love you and they're pulling out all the stops. They're spending trillions of dollars. They're sending out their benefits. They're giving you free vaccines because this is a national health crisis. But if you don't comply, you're on your own nickel. We don't care if you get tested or not. You're paying for it. It's this punitive stuff that's disgusting. So city employees, contractors, subcontractors will have to participate in weekly testing at their own cost and will continue to wear an ineffective face covering, I injected a word there, at all times when the workplace or during working hours. So I like that one. The city of Jackson says you will have to, if you don't provide proof of vaccination, you have to continue to wear face covering at all times when at the workplace and/or during working hours. So I guess you, if you're working remote at home, when you get up, 8 o'clock, got to put the mask on, keep it on till 5. I wonder if, I'm sure they probably mean maybe at the office, but in today's bizarro world, you have to just assume that the city might require, like Joe Biden on his Zoom call with the G20 last year. Or was that earlier this year? Joe Biden's the only one masked up on a Zoom call? Good grief. Speaking of Joe Biden, Biden gave his pretty brief statement yesterday on Afghanistan. He spent most of the time at the beginning of it talking about his Build Back Better program. Took a ton of credit for all these jobs being created and economic growth. And I'll tell you right now, it's not Joe Biden. It's Federal Reserve. You can create a lot of jobs when you print up $8 or $10 trillion. Shove it out into the economy. That tends to perk things up for a little while. There is that pesky little inflation that comes with it, but we're not supposed to pay attention to that. But we'll talk to Americans for Prosperity about that tomorrow, because he was talking about these. I mean, the headlines, I don't know what's going on. I'll be honest. I'm going to defer to Americans for Prosperity tomorrow. Probably Stephen Utrosky in with us. I don't pay attention to every single one of these bills. They're all monstrous. They're all ridiculous. They all include a bunch of stuff that is not roads, bridges, highways, which I think they should have already taken care of. Anyway, they've been collecting fees from us on every gallon of gasoline we've been buying since I've been on planet Earth. That's how you're supposed to maintain your roads. But anyway, I digress. But the headlines are all over the place. I'll see one that says $2.1 trillion, and then one that says, but it's always within the context, Democrats, just yesterday. I saw headlines that said Democrats clear the way in the House, I believe, for $3.5 trillion in infrastructure spending. And later on in the day, I see a headline that says, you know, Democrats on track with their $5 trillion plan. I mean, it's dizzying. I don't know. It's going to be horrible. It's going to be disastrous for the economy and for everybody's pocketbooks. So we'll talk to Americans for Prosperity about it tomorrow. You know, I know it's talking about this Afghanistan stuff. I've got a couple more things I want to inject into the conversation, things that are left out in, you know, mainstream and even conservative talk radio. Some things I think are pretty important considerations in all this, but I know it's boring to have someone recount a dream that they had. There are very few startings to a sentence or a conversation you have with a friend that you dread more than, ooh, let me tell you about my dream last night. But I'm going to do that right now. I had one take me to a very dark place. I'm hoping it wasn't a premonition, but I dreamt that Biden was drummed out on kind of the 25th Amendment, particularly in response to the Afghanistan stuff, where, you know, he's obviously displaying the fact he's just really not really up to speed on what's going on right now, and they're going to use this as a disaster to run him out of the 25th Amendment. But his replacement wasn't Kamala Harris, because nobody, including the Democrats, want Kamala Harris to be president. Her polling is terrible. She is as empty a suit as you can get. And that's in an entire city of Washington, D.C., full of empty suits. She's one of the emptiest. And so Joe Biden was replaced with anyone? Anyone? Hillary Clinton. Could this all be a big plot? All be a big plot to get Queen Hillary to the throne? So I tell you right now, you might want to tamp down your criticism of Joe Biden if my dream is any kind of premonition, because if you get rid of him, you know, that's really the thing, is that Joe Biden is obviously terrible. May actually be the worst president we've ever had. I'm not a presidential historian. There may have been some worse ones back in the early 1900s, sometime during the 1800s. I really don't know, but certainly in my lifetime, he will probably turn out to be. I don't even know if it's probably. Most probably, definitely, be the worst president we've ever had. But the problem is if you get rid of him, who takes his place? They could actually be a competent psychopath rather than just a mentally challenged, corrupt psychopath. Caitlin Johnston, I love her writing. She's got some real criticisms of capitalism that I would challenge, because I think the definition of capitalism should be really defined in this debate. What we are experiencing in the United States right now and around the world is not capitalism. It's not capitalism when defense contractors can use the men and women of our military to invade other countries to boost their sales. That's not capitalism. They're not competing out there. They've bought the government. Pharmaceutical companies are not capitalist organizations. And never before so have they been shown to be as fascistic as they are right now. So I would like to define the terms of capitalism. Capitalism is to me somebody who decides to open a restaurant. You know, one of us normies out here, us little people. You have an idea, you decided you want to do it, you, you save money or you borrow some money, you go start a business, you've got to please your customers, and if you don't produce, you go under. That's capitalism. The problem is we don't have that at the high levels. What everybody's pointing to at capitalism, which they think is, you know, Wall Street. Wall Street's not capitalist. Wall Street owns the SEC, their own watchdog group. Wall Street owns Congress. The big banks, they own everything. That's not capitalism. So we need to really define what capitalism is, but so many of the isms are I think, not accurately portrayed. But anyway, Caitlin Johnston, she's a great, great writer, and I love this she put. She's got one great headline, I'll tell you, at the end of this, too, one quick little quote. But this is what she wrote. She said, "The fact that Joe Biden's mind has declined sharply in recent years is significant, not because it means the U.S. president can't lead the country, but because it shows no U.S. president ever leads the country. Republicans keep highlighting the fact that the sitting president's brain doesn't work to suggest that a Republican president would be more competent. But of course, that's not true. You'd just be swapping an impotent puppet with dementia for an impotent puppet without dementia." And she's exactly right. The fact that the country is just still full speed ahead, doing everything we're doing, we're mass vaccinating everybody, we're still noodling around all over the world, we're bombing Somalia right now. It doesn't matter if the guy at the top is incapacitated. He doesn't control anything anyway. And I hate to break it to people, but that's the case in every administration, including the last one. This is why Donald Trump couldn't get us out of Afghanistan, because he didn't call the shots, apparently. She goes on to say, "The most powerful government in the world is run not by its elected officials, but by a loose, nationless alliance of plutocrats and government agency insiders who Americans never get to vote for. This has been obvious for a long time and gets more obvious by the day." She is dead on by this. I think it's a very clever way to put it. You look at Joe Biden and you think he's mentally incompetent, and you just realize, yeah, that's kind of the point. He's not running anything. Everybody knows that. Everybody says, what are all the public? You think George W. Bush was running things? Really? You think Barack Obama was deep in contemplative thought about Obamacare? You think he was sitting around, noodling around on a cocktail napkin, trying to figure out the best way to deliver health care to the American people? No, Barack Obama just stamped his name. It was like a branding exercise in Obamacare. He's our first black president. He was a community organizer. It's great branding for this new theft of American people's money by putting his name on Obamacare that was written by the health insurance industry. It was written. I'll say it again because I want people to look this up if they don't believe me. It was written by the chief of staff in Max Baucus' office, who was a healthcare lobbyist. She wrote Obamacare. They just slapped Barack Obama's name on it. Does anybody really believe at this point that George W. Bush was running anything? We know that Dick Cheney was running a lot of things. I don't know. Are there people that will still get angry at me for saying that? I took up for George Bush when he was in office, too, for his first term. And then I kind of woke up. And ever since then, I defy anybody to send me a George W. Bush clip where he says something intelligent. Anything. One single thing where he says something that really sounds like it required a lot of thought that made him seem as some level of an intellect. You can't find it. I've looked. And I've challenged people to send these things to me before. Big George W. Bush fans, 10 years ago, I said, you know, I think the guy was really kind of dumb. And that is bolstered by the fact that he went into retirement. What's he been doing? He's been drawing pictures of kitty cats. They gave him some paints and some brushes and some crayons, and they sent him into a corner, and he came out to be a little artist. Some of his stuff isn't bad. But that's exactly what you do with a child at that age. I mean, I think George W. Bush is mentally a child. He wasn't running anything. These people don't run anything. But here's my favorite thing from Caitlin Johnson, her quote, and then I got to take a break. She's got a headline that says, "Everyone's freaking out that Afghanistan is invading Afghanistan." And she's exactly right. The country that we invaded back in 2001 is reinvading itself and going back to what it was before we even got there. That's pretty funny. I'll be right back.
How hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.
I have been sitting here in the studio during our capitalist commercial break, laughing like an insane person, all by myself, just laughing at Caitlin Johnson. It's the quote of the month. Everyone's freaking out that Afghanistan is invading Afghanistan. They're just going right back to the government they had right before we got there. I'm sorry, you know, sometimes things really tickle you. It's quote of the month. Everyone's freaking out that Afghanistan is invading Afghanistan. It's perfectly normal for the United States to go half a world away, kick in doors, topple governments, install our puppets. But when that country goes back, and I don't like the Taliban, don't think I'm carrying any water for them. I would not be long in a Taliban-run society. I'm a little more opposed to authoritarian rule than would be allowed by the Taliban, but they're going right back to the way they were. It's okay for the U.S. to go topple. That's perfectly normal. It's normal for the United States to fly 7,000 miles with 200,000 troops, topple a government, invade it, and occupy it for 12 years. But oh my God, they're taking it back. That's the problem we have. Yesterday, I played a clip of a poppy farmer. It was really sad to see what's going on because he was telling us about the U.S. Chinook helicopters that were transporting poppies that his family grew, you know, to just doing their part in the supply chain of the heroin trade in Afghanistan. Because what I want to keep pointing out to people is, as everybody breathlessly decries this failed withdrawal, I want to say, no, it's the failed 20 years of daily catastrophe in Afghanistan that is the real problem. But I want to play this clip for you. It's probably the third or fourth time I've played it on this show. This is an old clip. I think it's from something like 2010, 2011. But it's worth remembering exactly what we've been doing over in Afghanistan with our sons and daughters, moms and dads, brothers and sisters.
So here's the question. Why are American troops now helping Afghan farmers grow that opium? Nick Schifrin reports from Afghanistan on a controversial new policy.
In western Kandahar, poppy farmers score, till, harvest their crop, and the Americans do nothing to stop them. U.S. soldiers greet farmers.
Can you show me which poppy field is yours?
They commiserate with farmers having a bad harvest.
Tell them I'm very sorry for his field this year, and hopefully he has a better harvest next year.
And in one case, they even paid.
Oh, don't tell me. The clip's going to fail here. I've played it for so many times. I think I've worn it out. Let's see if we can get this. Hold on one second. I'll get you back to it. Because it's just too delicious to ignore. This is what has been going on
here. So here's the question.
We have been helping the Taliban. I mean, helping the Afghanis grow heroin. And I'll break it down, the real tragedy of this, as soon as the clip's over.
Case they even paid a farmer $1,000 after U.S. and Afghan special forces burned his crop.
If you can come down to the base on my next visit, I'll make a payment.
This is controversial. The opium trade is the Taliban's main source of funding.
Around here, this poppy isn't only a plant. It's the very basis of the economy here. Poppy grows everywhere in this area, and most of the farmers base their entire income for the entire season on this harvest.
And that's why soldiers ignore and encourage the farmers. If the U.S. burned their crop, farmers would blame the U.S. for their poverty and turn toward the Taliban.
Afghanistan today produces over 90% of the world supply of heroin. And the invasion of Afghanistan occurred at a moment when the Afghan government, together with the United Nations, had implemented a far-reaching drug eradication program. In other words, they were eliminating opium and implementing crop rotation, crop substitution with the support of the UN. They were congratulated in the United Nations General Assembly in fall of 2001. And in fact, what the Taliban government achieved was a more than 90% collapse in opium production recorded in let's say, in 2001. Now, immediately upon the influx of U.S. troops and the occupation of Afghanistan, the production of opium sprung up to its historical levels and has increased multiple times since then.
So let me get this straight. We send our troops over to Afghanistan. They facilitate in the production of the poppy fields. We then ship that poppies back to the United States in the form of heroin. And then we take taxpayer dollars to arrest American citizens found with the heroin that was grown under troop supervision in Afghanistan. We arrest the American citizens at taxpayer expense and put them in a cage for using the product that was produced while the military oversaw it in Afghanistan. That's quite a little system we got working there.
Attention citizen. You are listening to a subversive radio broadcast that is not approved by the AMA, CDC, FDA, or any of your health overlords. It has a radical and unapproved message about health freedom that is not acceptable to the pharmaceutical companies, the medical establishment, or the state. Your health is now in the hands of the state and these extremely profitable organizations. Any attempts to reclaim your own health will result in an unacceptable personal freedom. Please discontinue listening and consult the CDC, the FDA, and the AMA for all approved health information. Your health is none of your concern. We are in charge now. If you continue listening, you will be considered anti-science and anti-government, and this will negatively affect your citizen score. You have been warned.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. And it is time for Hump Day Health, Natural Health News You Can Do's. We do this every Wednesday where we focus on trying to empower you. It's a radical message. It is not state approved, but we try to convince you that you are the one most responsible for your health outcomes. So we talk a lot about natural health and how nutrition plays a big part. And I got a great clip today from a doctor really explaining what's going on, why we're seeing these problems. It's not explained at the Thomas Dobbs level. It's not explained at the CDC level, the FDA level. More about that in just a second. But we've got it was a great clip. When I first saw it, I said, this is too long. I can't use it on the show. But I was curious in the topic, and I started listening to it. I go, oh, yeah, this is just, it's such a good explanation of why we are where we are right now health-wise in the United States. So we'll get to that in a minute. I start every show by explaining to you I am not a doctor, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a biologist, I'm not an immunologist, I'm not a virologist, I'm not an epidemiologist, I'm not a surgeon, not a nurse, not a therapist, I'm nothing. I have no certifications to advise you on your health. Everybody's different. I'm just telling you, do your own research and start to think about your health in terms of what you can do for it, because the cavalry's not coming. I don't know if you've noticed. Disease rates in this country continue to trend up. Strange, isn't it? With a $40 billion a year budget at a place called the Centers for Disease Control, yet disease keeps going up? I can't imagine a bigger failure of a mandate than the CDC has. But a couple of quotes of the day today. I like this one. This is from someone called Dr. Sebi. He says, a society that keeps cures a secret so they can continue to sell medications for huge profits is not a real society, but a huge mental asylum. Agreed. And, oh, gosh, I can't believe I didn't pull this up. I want to thank James for sending me this quote, and I'm going to give you the bona fides of the person, the quoter. This is a quote from Dr. Herbert Ley, L-E-Y. Dr. Herbert Ley, he's a former FDA commissioner. I'm going to read you a little bit about his background in just a second to show you exactly what the FDA is. But this is, again, this is Dr. Herbert Ley, the former FDA commissioner. He says, quote, the FDA protects the big drug companies and is subsequently rewarded. and using the government's police powers, they attack those who threaten the big drug companies. People think that the FDA is protecting them. It isn't. What the FDA is doing and what the public thinks it is doing are as different as night and day. That is from a former FDA commissioner. Top guy of the food chain. I'm going to read you a little bit about him, because I'm bound and determined to explain to you people. This FDA full approval means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. They probably had this date on their calendar. If they've even been looking at any research, I'd be surprised. They just came up with a date and said, yeah, that's the day we'll do full approval. It'll feel like we really did a lot of extensive study, you know, makes us look like we're doing our due diligence. Probably one FDA scientist in the back went, what about all this stuff on the VAERS system? And they go, shut up. We don't look at the VAERS system. Here's this guy, Dr. Herbert Ley. In 1963, he was appointed Associate Professor of Epidemiology and Microbiology at the Harvard School of Public Health and became the chairman of the department in 1964. In September 1966, Dr. Ley took a leave of absence from his position to become director of the Bureau of Medicine of the FDA. And on July 1st, 1968, he was appointed commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration by President Lyndon Johnson. Ley served as FDA commissioner for only a year and a half. He was ousted in December of 1969. His 3 years, again, this is an epidemiologist, a microbiologist, Harvard Public School of Health. He becomes the FDA commissioner. Boom. They didn't know who they were dealing with, apparently. His 3 years at the FDA, he started as the director of the Bureau of Medicines and then became the FDA director. His 3 years at the FDA came during a time when the FDA grew from an insignificant agency to the key agency protecting consumers. During that time, 300 drugs were removed from the market. After he left, Ley stated that he had, quote, constant, tremendous, sometimes unmerciful pressure from the drug industry, and that the drug company lobbyists, combined with the politicians who worked on behalf of their patrons, could bring, quote, tremendous pressure, unquote, to bear on him and his staff to try preventing FDA restrictions on their drugs. Ley complained that his agency faced budget shortfalls and lacked support from the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, and Congress. Ley was on the master list of Nixon's political opponents. Yeah, the Republican Party, really, they're the ones really, they're out there for you. They're fighting the good fight, those patriots. This is the same Richard Nixon that kept us involved in the Vietnam War for an extra 7 years, I believe. Yeah. Took us off the gold standard and apparently targeted this guy who was running the FDA. When he comes into the FDA, he takes 300 dangerous drugs off the market. They run him out of the organization. This was back in the late 1960s. This is when, I guess, Big Pharma got their full regulatory capture over the FDA. It's really quite amazing, the corruption that goes there. The media bought and paid for by the same pharmaceutical company, so they don't explain this to you. I thought this was, that's that's your FDA. I had another one here, too. Oh, yeah, here's one. Steve sent this one to me. This is actually from an article back on February 5th. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has not yet set minimum levels for heavy metals in most infant food. The agency did set a standard of 100 parts per billion inorganic arsenic for infant rice cereal, but even that level is considered much too high for a baby's safety, critics say, especially since the FDA has already set a much lower standard of 10 parts per billion of inorganic arsenic for bottled water. That FDA that's out there protecting you, well, they haven't gotten around to putting any of these standards of heavy metals in your food. And this came from an article. Again, this was from February 5th. I'll pull it up here. Leading baby food manufacturers knowingly sold products with high levels of toxic metals, a congressional investigation found. Four leading baby food manufacturers knowingly sold baby food that contained high levels of toxic heavy metals, according to internal company documents included in a congressional investigation. Dangerous levels of toxic metals like arsenic, lead, cadmium, and mercury exist in baby foods at levels that exceed what experts and governing bodies say are permissible. There's your FDA. They're on the case, aren't they? If it's on the shelves of the grocery store, it must be safe because it's got that FDA stamp of approval on it. Big Food also owns the Food and Drug Administration. They do it all. The CDC, here's another little report, just shows you how what a stellar job the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, what a great job they're doing. The headline that just came out, this is on Reuters, diabetes surges among young American youth. Study shows. Number of young people with the most prevalent form of diabetes nearly doubled in the United States from 2001 to 2017, according to a study published on Tuesday. Findings showed that the rate of young people ages 10 to 19 with type 2 diabetes increased by 95% over the 16-year period. Huh. There's your CDC. The Centers for Disease Control. Diabetes is a disease. It doubled in our kids. And I'm telling you, if you are not paying attention to what you are putting into the mouths of your children, and you think anything on the grocery store shelves is just fine because the FDA has approved it, and if there's any problems, the CDC will take care of it, you are setting your kids up for failure. When I come back, a couple of stories. One, I'm going to tell you kind of what's in the Mike Madison cabinet has been for well over a decade now. Anytime virus season comes around, anytime I think there's any concern for catching a bug, not even just COVID, flus, colds, whatever it is, bronchitis, it doesn't matter to me. If there's virus floating around, I'll tell you just a few easy things that you can do. You might want to have in your true medicine cabinet, which are supplements, not pharmaceuticals, to battle these things. I've had a lot of questions about this. It's a quick, easy list, and it's something you might want to include. I'll be right back. Can I get your hand to bite on? Just a piece of lip to bite on. What a night to fly my kite on. Do you want to flash a light on? Take a look. It's on display for you. Coming down, no, not today. Did you meet your fortune teller? Get it off with there is a stark difference between the medical establishment, the Thomas Dobbs of the world, who essentially fearmonger. They disempower people by telling you you're going to die if you don't do exactly what we say, and then they give you ineffective things like masks and hand washing. Hand washing is a good idea in general to a degree, but we got people rubbing the skin off their hands. They've been washing their hands so much. You're killing all the good bacteria that you're supposed to have in your ecosystem there. But this show is about empowering people and getting you to be a little bit more confident with your health. You know, one thing is you might need to lose a little weight. You got to come to grips with that at some point. We probably all do to a degree. Right now, I got a little extra. I'm trying to actually gain weight. But I got a little more fat than I like to carry around right now. Not much. I'm good BMI, but, you know, it's one of the things to come to grips with. But bottom line, what I wanted to bring up, because I've had just a ton of emails about this, and again, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a scientist, not a virologist, not an epidemiologist, but for years and years now, the natural health community, people like Dr. Mercola, Dr. Berg, Dr. Axe, Rhonda, oh gosh, what's her name? She's on Joe Rogan's show all the time. Anyway, there's some great natural health people out there. They've told me this for years and years, and I started taking their advice 16 years ago of keeping these few little staples around, particularly during virus season, and I hadn't had a sick day in almost 16 years now. So this is the Mike Madison virus preparedness kit for my home, and this is for any virus, and I've done it throughout COVID. So far, so good. Who knows? But the things I'll always keep on hand are vitamin, say it with me, vitamin D3 here on the Vitamin D Show. Now make sure your vitamin D levels are high. Someone called in the other day, talked about getting their vitamin D levels tested. Doctors, this past year, doctors should have been getting people's vitamin D levels tested and gotten you to increase your vitamin D levels. It is shown to be very protective against bad outcomes from COVID, but they refused to talk about it because it costs about $5 a month. And not a nickel of it goes to the medical establishment. But vitamin D3, make sure your levels are good. And usually during the summer, I don't take near as much vitamin D3. If I'm out in the sun, I don't take my vitamin D that day. I'll save myself that 3 cents or whatever it is. But get vitamin D. You can get it free from the sun if you want to, but I keep vitamin D3 on hand. Vitamin C, I have a powder that you can just put into, 8 ounces of water and swirl around. I can take as much as I want to. I usually take at least 2,000. I even forget the measurement of that. I'm not a doctor, not a scientist, but I think it's IUs. No, that's, I think that's vitamin D. Anyway, I keep powdered vitamin C around so I can kind of high dose with that. Think about vitamin C. You can high dose with vitamin C. Your stomach will let you know if you've done too much. Trust me. Do that near home base. Let me just put it that way. But you'll find a level that your body, and a lot of times, a lot of people that are vitamin C deficient, my understanding is that you can take a lot of it and your body will absorb it fine. You won't have any gastrointestinal problems. And then all of a sudden you will, and it means, hey, we got enough vitamin C. You can tamp it down now, and you actually bring your levels down to find an acceptable level. But vitamin C, been good for fighting viruses. And then zinc and quercetin. People talk about this. My understanding is that quercetin, which is a natural supplement, quercetin actually is what opens the cells to let the zinc inside. I believe it's the same mechanism that they say hydroxychloroquine is, that you take hydroxychloroquine along with zinc. But I'm always going to opt for something natural rather than any pharmaceutical, even if it's cheap and been safe and used for decades. That's all fine and good, but I don't take aspirin either. So I'm going to go for something natural. So quercetin supposedly opens up the cells to allow the zinc in. The zinc stops viral replication. So vitamin D3, vitamin C, zinc, and quercetin is kind of like the little virus pack that has either worked for me or somehow I've like danced through raindrops and never been exposed to the flu in the past 16 years. I doubt very seriously that's the case. I would imagine my body has fought it off successfully. For myself, just general health stuff, things that I always keep around. One is apple cider vinegar. I just think it's just the miracle substance. Maybe it's all placebo. Maybe I've bought so much into the apple cider vinegar hype that it's my mind that actually is keeping me healthy. That's fine, too. I don't really care. Something seems to be working. So I'd keep apple cider vinegar. Make sure you get organic and get the stuff with the mother in it. Bragg's is the big brand that most people buy. You can find it at almost every single store now. It's gotten a lot of popularity. It's good for things like weight management, blood sugar management. Do your own research. There's a million things that apple cider vinegar is credited with, but I keep that around at the first sight of any cold or sniffle or chest congestion or anything like that. I immediately put a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar and 8 ounces of water, and I drink it down, and I do that about every 2 to 3 hours for the first day. Usually by the second day, it's gone, but if it's still around at all, I'll do it a couple of times that next day, and so far, nothing has ever survived, along with the vitamins D, C, zinc, these kinds of things. And probiotics is the other thing. They talk about gut health being very important to your overall immune system, so probiotics. Another tip that I learned myself a long time ago, and I did this with my kids, and they really, they didn't even really resist it that much. I guess when you're sick, you don't really feel like eating stuff like you do when you're normally healthy. But at any signs for your children or for yourself, if you feel something coming on, one of the first things I did with my kids was I said, no added sugars, none, zero, zip, zilch. That was all the way down to fruit juices. They're not going to get a bunch of added sugar during any kind of a viral infection, bacterial infection, things like that. My understanding is, and I always couch it that way, my understanding is that sugar feeds these diseases, and so stop sugar immediately. If you start feeling bad, get off sugar. Even if you've got an emotional attachment, I just feel so bad, I just want some candy. I think that's a terrible, terrible, terrible idea. So I avoid all those things. And if you got something that's snotty, I've always kept dairy away from my children as well. I'll take them off the dairy. Fresh air is something. When my kids did that, when I first started getting into this stuff and they still got, things from time to time, I stuck them in a lounge chair outside for at least 20 to 30 minutes, unless it was really freezing outside. And even a couple of times when it was pretty cold, I still made them sit in the backyard, get a little bit of sun on their face and get some fresh air for a little bit of time. This idea of quarantining yourself in your house with a bunch of cold medications, staying out of the sun, staying in this diseased room, I think is a terrible idea as well. So get a little bit of fresh air. And then finally, garlic. I always keep garlic on hand. As a matter of fact, don't tell anybody, but I've got a clove of garlic up here at the station. Sometimes when I stay up here at night, I'll add it to my food. But garlic has great antibacterial, antiviral properties as well. Natural, it's about $1 for an organic clove of garlic, and it'll last you for forever. I do like garlic. It also helps with the social distancing because nobody wants to come anywhere near you after you've eaten the garlic. And then one other thing I ran across, and one of the reasons I love doing this segment on the show, is I learn things too. Green tea has always been a staple for me. Even when I brew tea, I'm not a big, cup of hot water, tea bag, pinky out, drinking a glass of tea. That's not really me. But when I've made iced tea by the buckets, I do unsweetened tea. Never, luckily for me, I've never had a taste for sweet tea. I can't stand sweet tea. And I had a heavy Mountain Dew dependency problem for quite a while in my 20s, but I've never liked sweet tea. But when I brew iced tea, I'll use green tea bags instead of regular tea bags, and I drink it unsweetened. And so in doing some research for today to put this out there, I ran across this story. It said the way green tea is made also affects the health benefits it yields. Health Castle points out that, quote, green tea leaves are slightly steamed before drying, and so the nutrients are preserved intact, unlike black and other varieties of tea, which are all fermented and therefore lose a lot of their benefits. So that's why green tea is kind of known to be better for you than just a regular tea. I make green tea iced tea. Tastes absolutely fantastic to me. Tastes really kind of the same, but there's a little added benefit to it. So if you make a lot of iced tea, I know a lot of people in Mississippi love their sweet tea. I don't like it. It's better if you can do unsweet tea, but if you do unsweet tea, you might try doing it with green tea. A lot of stuff out there talking about COVID and green tea. It's got a lot of these polyphenols and antioxidants and things like that, so it's just another thing. And it just keeps you overall healthy. Again, I'm not laying out some kind of COVID protocol there. I'm telling you, for basically any disease, things that I do every single year to boost my immune system. And I would say with everything I just told you right there, it may be $20 to $25 per month. So over the course of cold and flu season every year, I may spend $75 to $100, and nothing has touched me for 16 years. No deductibles, no office visits, no co-pays, no nothing. I just keep myself healthy with about $75, $100 during the winter months, and I'm good to go. There's some recommendations. When I come back, I got a couple other little stories, and then I'm going to get into this clip with Dr. Glidden, who really explains what has happened. I think it's good context so that you can see why. You know, one of the things I used to run into, my father in particular, in older generations, when I started eating organic food, and I promise you, I'm not real annoying about it, and I eat a ton of stuff that's not organic. It's not like I'm pure. I'm not annoying like a vegan. No offense, vegans. But when I started kind of tending that way, you know, you have older people say, oh, look, we didn't have organic when we were kids. We ate whatever we were. We were fine. Well, the problem is that the food has changed. It's changed. A lot of what my father ate, being born in 1930, it was organic just because that's how they used to farm. It's the factory farming that's become a problem, and it's leading to these diseases. Dr. Glidden's got a great explanation of it and some of the problems that have arisen from the way we produce and consume food. So I'll play that too in just a second. Stay with me. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WIP. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WIEB, and it's Wednesday, so we're doing Hump Day Health, Natural Health News You Can Use. And somebody called during the break with something very interesting. They talked about rooibos tea. They said they couldn't really tolerate green tea very well because of some of the acids in it, so they used something called rooibos tea. It's from Africa. It means red bush, and it is supposedly more mild, so if you can't do green teas, maybe this is something you try. She said it's pretty prevalent, but I'd never heard of it before. I'm always learning something. And the other thing is, too, I got talking to her, and I don't take calls on the air during this show because I don't ever want to get myself into a situation where somebody asks me a question and it sounds like I'm advising you on your health. I am just giving you stuff to research, and I'm trying to spark that something inside of you that says, you know, I don't feel great. I want to feel better. This guy says, you know, I need to search for natural cures for whatever ails me. And then you try these things. Every single person is different. I've used ketogenic diet and felt great on it. Some people try it and they really don't like it. That's fine. There is not a one size fits all. It takes some work. It's some trial and error of different things. If I just recommended green tea to you and you say, well, I might want to try green tea, but it gives you problems, then try this rooibos. You know, you have to do some experimentation. The beautiful thing about natural health stuff is, you know, unless it's, you know, some supplement or something is contraindicated by one of your medications that you're on, then you may need to figure that out with your doctor. But usually for things like vitamin D, you know, if someone boosts their vitamin D levels, the side effects are almost all positive. Now, there may be a situation where someone could take an entire bottle of vitamin D and make themselves sick. I don't know, but there's a lot of room for error in natural health stuff. You're just giving yourself, your body, more of what it's supposed to be getting from food in the first place. You know, I can eat a ton of celery and probably make myself sick. But it's not the same sick as if I overdose on some kind of prescription medication. Not near as serious. Your body will let you know a lot of times if you're headed in the wrong direction, usually in your stomach. That's usually the first place it's going to go, all right, that's enough of that. So your body will tell you. Anyway, interesting tip on that tea. Let's see what else I wanted to get into today. I'm going to mention this. If you want to get my show notes, pneumonia is going around. We got a lot of people that are sick right now. I'm telling you, COVID is definitely, it's out there. Something's floating around. I assume it's COVID. I don't know how in the world they're testing to say it's this Delta variant. But variants may be a consequence of this immunization program we've got. It's forcing variants out into the wild. Anyway, I know a lot of people that are getting stuff. There is something, and you know I'm not going to take the time to get into it today. But you can look up things with hydrogen peroxide. People have used hydrogen peroxide nebulized. It means you're inhaling a mixture of it. And look, I'm going to be very cautious when I explain this. Do your own research on this. You don't want the wrong kind. You don't want it too heavily concentrated. But, you know, I have a link today. If you get my show notes and you're interested in this, if you have some chest issues, and some people have talked about taking care of, you know, chronic coughs and things like that by some of these methodologies. But there is there's an article here I don't want to go into. I don't have the time. And it's also very wordy. It's from orthomolecular.org. And Linus Pauling, who everybody knows is quite a contributor to health stuff, was into orthomolecular science. And this is a piece called Curing Viruses with Hydrogen Peroxide, Can a Simple Therapy Stop the Pandemic? And it's written by a Thomas E. Levy, who is a medical doctor. And so this is interesting. It's something if you're looking at chest problems or pneumonia things. I have used this kind of thing with hydrogen peroxide before. And to good success, at least for myself. But again, has to be properly diluted. If you take hydrogen peroxide into your lungs in a highly concentrated thing, you could cause yourself some problems. So do your research. But it is something that I think is another one of these, you know, therapies that could be used each and every year for a lot of things. Very cheap. Nobody really benefits from it. You can do it at home. And they just won't talk about these things. There's just so many natural cures out there. It's just really amazing. I had a friend who's lost about 15 pounds over the last couple of weeks using intermittent fasting. I just throw that out there. I'm sure she doesn't mind. She's happy about it. I'm stunned. I mean, that's a lot of weight loss. So she's just gone into intermittent fasting. And the reason I really mention it is I ran across this story. Intermittent fasting diet could help protect older people from falls and other injuries by building up their muscles, a study has discovered. Intermittent fasting, also known as time-restricted eating, could also be a cost-efficient intervention to prevent type 2 diabetes, fatty liver disease, and liver cancer, a team from the Salk Institute for Biological Studies in California says. Fasting for a longer period could also better protect against infectious diseases like COVID and even save people from dying of sepsis. Again, this full study is on, this was on studyfinds.org. Intermittent fasting is one of these things that a lot of people are trying. It's gotten kind of faddish, but if you stop and think about it, who were the original people who did intermittent fasting? I would imagine it was our Neanderthal ancestors who did not have a refrigerator, did not have DoorDash. There were a lot of times that they just did not eat a whole lot, and when they got their hands on something, I'm sure they took care of it. They ate it, but they did not have food lying around all the time, so they went for long periods of time not eating. It seems like that's a very normal thing for the human mammal to experience. So while it's gotten popularity now, it is probably biologically something that we're designed to do. It's intermittent fasting. It's trying to just close your eating window so you're not eating 18 hours a day constantly, but instead just focusing on 6 to 8 hours during the day. That's when you get your eating done, and the rest of the time your body is not spending all its energy digesting food, but cleaning out the system, doing kind of its maintenance work, rather than always challenging it with new foods and with new foods or new toxins for the standard American diet because we're eating so much garbage. I'm going to take a break. When I come back, we're going to get into this clip with Dr. Glidden. I think it's a fascinating thing. I hope I can get through the whole thing, where he talks about really what's happened to our food supply, why we're seeing these rises of chronic diseases, and it'll be some good tips on what you can do to make sure that doesn't happen to you and your family. Stay with me.
Citizens from all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I bailed you out when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment for today. You know, every time I get this show ready, I have to look through everything I've got, and I try to judge it. Okay, is this just something that's interesting to someone who is a health nerd like me? Because there's, I like the science, I like the biology, I like the explanations of stuff. And I really, I cut out a lot of stuff that I think is just seems health nerdy. I'm trying to make the show entertaining as well and informative. So I thought this was both. Hopefully you will think so too. This is Dr. Peter Glidden. And he gets asked, particularly originally, about psychotropic drugs. Why are Americans on so many mental health things? You know, we never think about it. We think we've got this mental health crisis in this country. God knows they're throwing a lot of stuff at us that are making us crazy. But a lot of the mental health crisis we're seeing is rooted in our nutrition as well. It is not an accident that mental health problems are going up with other chronic diseases. That's how this gets originally kicked off, but he just does what I think was a fantastic job of explaining what's happened to our food and how it's manifesting itself in our poor health outcomes.
I want to talk about another popular drug. The drug with the most sales in 2013 was an antipsychotic. One of them, I think it was Abilify, $6.4 billion on its own. Two of the top five were in that same drug class. How concerning is that, that business has gotten so big?
Well, it's extremely concerning, and if we take it back a step, if we drill it down a little more, what's of greater concern is that these drugs are on the rise. Now, we must assume that they're being prescribed prudently and that doctors aren't just willy-nilly prescribing these things, but the patients are presenting with real symptoms in real time that are bothering the patient. So what does this mean? This means that psychoactive illnesses, illnesses of the brain chemistry, are on the rise. Well, what could possibly be causing this? Statin drugs, among other things, right? Plus fat-free diets, plus not enough raw materials for the central nervous system to function the way that nature intended it to. The greater question that needs to be asked here is, what is causing so many people to need psychoactive medication? And from our point of view, the main nutrients involved with funky, for lack of a better word, brain chemistry, minerals, trace minerals. There are 90 essential nutrients that the human body needs to function optimally, 90. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, and 2 essential fatty acids. The lion's share are minerals. And, you know, things like calcium, selenium, zinc, sulfur, right? And then strange, peculiar trace minerals like europium and vanadium and chromium and molybdenum that most people have never heard of. The body needs minerals in order to have healthy, optimized brain function, right? I mean, it needs minerals for everything. Linus Pauling, 2-time Nobel Prize winner, Linus Pauling. One of his most famous quotes was, you can trace every chronic disease back to a mineral deficiency. A mineral deficiency. So the funny thing about minerals is, and this is one of my specialties, this is one of the areas of medical nutrition that I know a lot about and have tons of clinical experience with. Minerals are only found in the soil. animals cannot make minerals. Plants cannot make minerals, right? If plants could make minerals, we could bioengineer lettuce to make gold, right? We'd all be rich. But a cow's body can't make calcium. Well, where does a cow get calcium from? Well, a cow gets calcium from eating grass that was grown in soil in which there was calcium. Now, if there's no calcium in the soil, or 10% of what should be there, there's going to be no calcium in the cow's body, or only 10%, and so forth and so on. It all goes back to the soil. Because the soil is minerally deficient, our bodies are minerally deficient. And this is getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger because of two things. Number one, modern agricultural methods have removed the bacteria that are in the soil. The bacteria that are in the soil digest the minerals that are in the soil, and then the plants suck up the digested minerals, and then we eat the plant, right? Okay. So because of modern agricultural methods with pesticide use, extreme pesticide use, the soils, the bacteria that live in the soils are being killed, so even if the minerals are in the soil, which they're not, the bacteria aren't present to digest them, and the plant is going to be minerally deficient. If the plant is minerally deficient, guess what? The farmer eats, the plant is weak. So the farmer needs to use more pesticides to put on the plant to keep the bugs from eating it because they don't want to lose the crop. So it's a vicious circle. It leads to more and more and more and more and more and more pesticide use and weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker food. Now, also, when you harvest nutritionally deficient plants, they taste like crap. So what does the food industry have to do to get you to eat them? Put sugar in with the food. This is one of the reasons why sugar consumption has gone up, I don't know, like 800%. It's crazy how much sugar we eat here. And, you know, it's not because of the sugar industry is out to destroy humanity. It's because the food tastes like crap. Why does the food taste like crap? Because it's grown in minerally deficient soil, period. So everybody's bodies are becoming more and more and more and more minerally deficient as we go further and further in time. Now, when you combine bad farming processes, which are snowballing into extreme mineral deficiencies, with one other thing, people's bodies get mineral deficiencies accelerate to a tremendous degree. Whole grains. Wheat, barley, rye, and oats contain gluten. Gluten is a protein. A protein is a long chain of amino acids. It's like a string of pearls. And it's the stomach's job to break that string of pearls, liberate the individual amino acids, which are essential nutrients. But the chemical bonds which hold the amino acids of gluten together are really, really difficult for most people's stomach acid to break. So if you eat a whole wheat sandwich, you chew it up, you swallow it, it goes down into your stomach, and the acid in your stomach tries to break the string of pearls of the protein in the gluten, but it can't do it. So now, instead of individual amino acids tumbling through the small intestine, which is the next stage of digestion, you get these big, complicated architectural strings of proteins, undigested protein. Now, your small intestine's job is to absorb the nutrients that your stomach has just turned into liquid into the bloodstream. And your small intestine does that through tiny tissue called villi. They're like octopus arms. And the job of the villi is to grab onto a nutrient and bring it into the bloodstream, right? Well, when the villi attempt to grab onto an individual amino acid, no problemo. But when the villi attempts to grab onto a long, complicated chain of unbroken amino acids, they become destroyed or they become inflamed. Now, it's the villi's job to absorb nutrients, which leads to one of life's greatest ironies. The more whole grains you eat, the harder it is for your body to absorb the nutrients that your stomach just digested. So not only are the foods minerally deficient because the soils are minerally deficient, but your body's ability to absorb what little nutrition there is in the food is extremely compromised because you listened to General Mills, Procter & Gamble, Monsanto, and the people that make the food. It's a bad idea to let the people who make the food give you advice about what food to eat. Four of the most dangerous foods on planet Earth, wheat, barley, rye, and oats. My recommendation for everybody 100% across the board, stop eating these foods completely for 4 weeks in a row. 4 weeks. 4 weeks in a row. 28 days. Then on day 29, eat a lot of gluten. Have pancakes for breakfast, have a sandwich for lunch, have cookies and crackers, have pasta for dinner, and see how you feel. And as God is my witness, if you make it to lunch without something bad happening, I'll eat my hat.
All right, so yeah, that's very interesting. And to tie this kind of all together as I end the show today, I've told you about the FDA being captured by the pharmaceutical industry. If he's right about gluten, and certainly a lot of people have benefited from cutting it out of their life, we look at the USDA food pyramid, the base of it, the biggest part of it, bread, grains, gluten. Isn't that strange that these agencies that are captured by Big Pharma or promoting a diet that, if he's right, is actually promoting more and more disease in Americans, which requires more and more what? Anyone? Anyone? More pharmaceuticals to treat. It's a big rabbit hole. The USDA, is the food pyramid just actually a food funnel to get you into the loving arms of the pharmaceutical industry? Kind of feels that way. That's all the time I got. If you want my show notes, Mike Madison, WYAB.com. See you.
No matter Bye-bye. How hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.